Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Hey fam, how are you guys doing? I hope you guys are having a great week. We're so happy to be back with you here on The Good Life. Today is a really special episode. Before we get into our really special interview, y'all, which is a great story that is totally going to encourage and inspire you, Cezanne and I have got to be real with you guys. We have been going through a lot this past year, and we want to have a real conversation, but it's not one of ho-hum, but it's one that will actually really encourage you to open up that closet and face that passion or that purpose that you have tucked under the rug for so long. I believe that God has such a strong calling on all of our lives, not just a calling of mediocrity, but a calling that is specific to you. You have gifts, you have talents that are unique to you, but if you open that closet, you're gonna face that thing. It's gonna be the resistance that's gonna try and keep you from living in your purpose. And today, fam, we are going to share the story of what we've been going through and all of the resistance that we've been going through and the sea that we have had to cross to get to our purpose. But fam, guess what? It's been a rocky journey, but it's been nothing short of miraculous. It's been nothing short of life-changing, and I wouldn't change it for the world. I can't wait to share this intimate message with you guys and also our interview with Natalie coming right up. Stick around, fam. It's about to get good. Hey fam, welcome back to The Good Life. Oh my gosh, what a whirlwind. What a whirlwind week it has been for us, y'all. Such a weird time. Such a weird time in our life, y'all.
How many fights did we get into this week?
We've gotten into a few fights, y'all. We've like been kind of, it's one of those weeks where...
Life sucks.
Well, it's just one of those weeks where it's like someone's like, and the other person's like, and the other one's like, and then you're like, that's the sound of like...
Who's the duck there?
You're right. That did sound like a duck. But it's
right,
a sound of like odd cat fighting. There's been this kind of, I think it's just, there's been a lot of outside pressure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think you and I have such a loving relationship, but I realize when we get like this, there's something else in the pot trying to stir things up.
It's usually something in our environment that's causing us to get to these moments of feeling overwhelmed or like we're having like mental breakdowns, or in this case this week Teenie just decided to really show up with her terrible two phase and not take her naps,
right,
and not go to bed till 11 o'clock at night for some crazy reason we couldn't figure out. And so that can also take a toll on you physically and emotionally. And we're just going to be honest, like sometimes life isn't always good, guys, you know. And as we're working and figuring out like what are those steps towards living a good life, in the middle of that God is going to throw you challenges, and there's going to be curveballs, and there is going to be some not so good weeks in your life or not so good seasons of life. And I guess if you can't already tell in our voices, like, babe, I just feel like this is all coming from us being homesick. Not homesick, but sick of not having a home.
Yeah. I mean, and a lot of it comes from that. I mean, I was talking to my brother last night and I was like, I've hit my breaking point 5 times. You know what I mean? It's like, you hit your breaking point. You're like, okay, pick myself up, and then your breaking point again. And this is not to be ho-hum. This is actually to encourage anyone out there who feels like they've hit their breaking point. I just feel like right now, like I'm not unhappy. That's the thing. I'm not unhappy, and there's a difference. I feel unsettled and I feel uncertain about what's going to happen, but I am certain that things will happen and things will work out and it will be fine. But I'm not unhappy. And yeah. I was listening to Rick Warren. Love me some Rick Warren. So do you.
Mm-hmm.
We went to his church in LA for a while.
And we're still keeping up with
and
him.
And he was just talking about how happiness is a choice. And I 100% agree with that. And so fam, just to fill you in, I mean, we've realized that we're not sure when we're going to go back to Los Angeles.
Or if we're going to go back.
And if we do go back, for how long, if we're going to buy a house there, buy a house here.
The truth is, the wild card that came at us after the holidays, because, you know, we shared an update on my channel of like, what's the current situation? And we were like, we're going to just stay in Texas through the holidays. And then in January, hopefully figure it out, right? Because we've been here now for almost 9 months. You want to know what's gotten really tough in the equation? It's everything that we had all kind of had in the back of our heads, which was, what if Saz and Steve fall in love with Texas and they don't want to go back to LA? And so Stevie and I have been going back and forth. We both feel torn, you know, for different reasons. Yeah. It's tough, babe, because I know that you grew up here in Austin. I didn't. So it feels new to me.
Right.
And I feel like this new chapter here can begin, but I can see how you would feel like you're settling back in your hometown. And that's not something that you ever pictured for your life.
I never. Oh, man, y'all. I was always that person who was like, I'm never going to live where I grew up. You know, just always had my sights set on, quote unquote, bigger and better things. And I don't necessarily think LA is better than Austin. It's bigger.
But we've built a life there and a career there and put a lot of hours and years into that city.
Right. And there's just relationships. I mean, I'm such a relational person, like on my priority list in life. I just naturally place relationships above many other things. And sometimes maybe gets me into a little bit of trouble, but really that's who I am as a person. Like I am a people person. I love to interact with people. I love to secure good relationships. Mm. Like I love to have good relationships with people. It brings me so much joy. It brings me so much purpose.
Yeah.
And I love talking with those people. Like I love having guys over for cigar night and we hang out and we talk and the cigar is just an accessory to our great conversation, you know? And it's like, that's what I really love. And I've just been really, I just feel like I have been split in two, but I would have to say like, even the other night when we had a conversation about like, what if we don't go back to LA and that kind of becoming a reality? I got really sad like that night, but the next day I woke up, like my joy wasn't stolen from me, you know, because I was just so, I'm just like, God, I want what you want for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even want to be blinded by my own selfishness. Just show me what to do.
Right.
And I just know that I can rely on that in any season. Like even when I'm super confused and even when I'm really frustrated, I can rely on God's leadership. When I simply just look to him, you know, and I'm like, this is confusing and this isn't necessarily what I would pick right now, but I know you pick the best for me. And so I trust you. And if I trust you, I can lean on that. And if I can lean on that, that gives me hope and it gives me joy.
I think what we've both realized is that, you know, LA has been amazing for us because that's where we left the nest. And we were able to spread our wings and fly and really grow closer to God while we were out there away from our families. Really, we were forced to have to kind of pave the way and find our unique purpose out there in the midst of this distracting just culture and noise of Hollywood. And then somewhere along the way, we find out we're pregnant with Teeny, and suddenly we were praying about like, God, do we need to leave Texas? And LA, do we need to leave LA? And then we found this home there and God literally led us into that home with so many incredible signs. And in that season of life, we were meant to be in LA. And so now we're just like the community we built there, all of that stuff. It's like, it's still there, but why do we feel called to sort of walk the other way, you know, and we're just kind of in this season right now where we're just a little torn. And at this point, we feel like God has given us so many visions and revelations throughout the past 9 months that we won't get into on this episode, but we have confidence that God is sort of putting the ball in our court at this point. We believe that God is just like, you pick.
Yeah, you're just,
you know, I feel like God is saying, you pick. But he's also given me a lot of these reflections about, you know, our family and practically where we're going with that. And I don't know why God has shown me a glimpse that both cities could really be home for us. So that's why we've been feeling like the whole dual residency thing might be a legitimate thing for us in our current life for the next 3 to 5 years. But I love Texas. I love Austin. But I've just grown this newfound love for Texas. And I just see, I don't know, I see long term us really building a life here and having a place here where we could fall back on Texas, you know? But I don't feel like our job in LA is done. You know, I don't feel like we're done in LA. Yeah. So that's where we've just kind of been praying and kind of reshifting our plan a little bit.
I think, I want you guys to hear is that I think in life you're given so many choices, you know, you're given so many options. What you choose to put your time into, you know, is what will yield results. But also sometimes God presents like this other path. And the interview that we're going to have with Natalie today is such a good example of this, where it's like, even though the thing that you're doing, that you're in, is not a bad thing, there's something greater that God has for you.
And it's up to you. Yeah. He gives us the free will.
Right. It's up to you. But the point is that there's it's never just easy.
Mm-hmm.
There's always resistance. You know, there's resistance of whether it's like money or it's like locating from LA to Texas and you're going to miss people. I mean, those are real things. But it's like God, if you trust him and you let him, you know, take you down a new path, he always covers you with more than you thought that you had before.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't get so sad. Like, I'll have times where I'm sad. I'll have days where I think about my friends or I think about this transition and I get sad because I'm like, man, like a life that we had is just all of a sudden like not the same anymore. But then I think about God and all the things that he has done for us and how, you know, even 7 years ago, you know, we had nothing. You know, and then we were able to pay for our own wedding and overcome everything with your family. And I'm like, God did that with us.
That's right.
And so I look at a new path and just based on the you know, the resume that God has given us, I'm like, he'll do it again, you know? And so I just wanted to have this conversation, fam, because I know there's so many of you out there that maybe you're living your life and you haven't really wanted to think about that other calling or that other thing that's kind of tucked away in your closet. Maybe you've put it in the past and you've been like, yeah, I don't really want to do that. Or maybe your whole life people told you, you know, you're meant to help people or, you know what I mean? You're meant to go into this field. And maybe you didn't want that for yourself at a certain time. But maybe there's this calling or this yearning or this passion or this purpose inside of you that you have been putting on the shelf, that you've been putting in the closet because you're scared of what it will cost you. But what I want to tell you, fam, is that when you truly follow God and you listen for him and you let him lead, he will cover you with more blessing in that thing.
That's right.
In that calling, in that purpose than you could ever imagine. And yeah, sometimes you have to sacrifice fun or you have to sacrifice living in a certain place or... But like he'll bless you where you are and where you're going more than what you had before.
In Romans 8:30, it says, God has given every necessary resource to those he's called, equipping them to accomplish whatever he's asking. He calls you, qualifies you, and then empowers you with the boldness to take the first step. Should you take a skill development course at a local community college? Maybe some of you out there are hoping to start your own Bible study. Maybe for somebody, it's housing an exchange student in your spare room for a semester, or maybe it's impacting your community by addressing those that are in great need. Whatever that calling, that itch, that tick, that thing is, know that when God calls you, he qualifies you, and then he empowers you with the boldness to take the first step. I love that.
Boldness has really been a big word for us.
I think that's been the word of the
week. It's kind of been like a recurring word. You know, when we were praying the other night, I was praying like, God, what do we do? You know, what are we going to buy? Where are we going to buy our house, here or LA, or what do we do? And what's interesting is everything I just said is like when you trust God to lead you, sometimes he will turn that question back around on you and be like, well, what do you want to do? And sometimes he lets us be bold and make a choice. And I was just praying. I felt like God said to me, be bold. Because I'm going to trust you to make a decision. And the other thing is when God lets you make a decision, he's with you in the decision that you make. And if your heart is always postured towards him saying, God, I want to please you, even if you think that you made a mistake, he will always turn it for good. You don't have to worry about like, oh, did I make this irreparable mistake? You know, did I make this mistake that I can't repair? And he always turns it for good. It says in the Bible that he uses things for the good of those who love him, you know, even negative things.
Yeah.
And so I don't look back on life being like, should we have sold our house in LA? No, I don't question any of that because my heart has always been and our heart has always been that we're going to follow God's leadership no matter where that goes. And that's why we haven't bought a house, y'all. We could have bought a house in LA as soon as we sold a house.
There were so many opportunities, right?
But it was like, we want to live a life that is following God. And I have to tell you, I wouldn't trade this crazy tornado and turmoil of not having a house for anything because the amount of things that we have gained and learned about ourselves and about not needing things and materials mm-hmm. in this season has way surpassed the value of that has surpassed the value of a $5 million house or whatever the heck the house is going to cost. You know what I'm saying? But it's like the lesson that God wants to do in your life. He just needs you to give some things up so that you can truly learn something and your perspective changes. And when your perspective changes, you mature. And when you mature, you have more character. And when you have more character, God can use you because he trusts you even more with these valuable things that he wants to give to you. And so that's been the story. I mean, that's been the story of this last year. It's not just been 9 months. It's been a year for us.
I love what you said. You said, when you really trust God to lead you, I believe that he will feed you. And I think that just really, you can go back to the Bible when he freed the slaves, you know, out of Egypt. And he was leading those Israelites. And literally, they had no food. What did he do on their 40-year trek? You know, he fed them. He clothed them. He provided for them. You know, he kept them safe. That's what a father does for his children. And we have to remind ourselves of that every day, because I'm human, you're human, we all are, and life can get us down sometimes. Our environment can get us down. What the world says about us can try to get us down. But it's so important to stay in tune with God and to check in with him, just like we check in with our friends and our families when we text them and call them and FaceTime them. So important to have those pit stops in your day where you check in with God and you are in tune with the Lord and talking to him. And it's amazing how that can instantly make things better and turn things around and kind of get you back on track. Today's interview is really, really about all of that in another story sort of way. Natalie's story.
And it's funny, her story and what we were just talking about both have in common with the story that you were talking about. When the Israelites were freed from Egypt, they were walking away from Egypt and they came upon the Red Sea, and Pharaoh had decided at this point he wanted to chase after them and either to slaughter them and imprison them and bring them back. And when they got to the Red Sea, all of the people who had been freed, who were so happy once they were freed, once they got to the Red Sea and saw that Pharaoh was coming, they were like, why did we do this? We should have stayed slaves.
Fear.
I mean, these people, they said we should have stayed slaves because they met resistance, right? Right after you make that choice or right before you make that choice, before it's finalized, there is resistance. There's a Red Sea that you have to cross, right? Just like for Natalie and her story coming up, to make the move that she had to make, there was the issue of money. How am I going to have money? Or there was the issue of what am I going to do? Or the issue of where am I going to live? You're going to face some major resistance.
Life and death moment, yeah.
Just like we have faced major resistance in this process of being uncomfortable.
But then what came after that? Do you know?
Well, here's what happened, y'all.
He split the sea so I could
Y'all, you had to sing it, didn't you?
Right.
So I knew you were going to sing that.
What did God do in the midst of the storm that followed?
But here's what happened is that they were questioning, and Moses was like, you know, obviously he had faith in that moment. God split the Red Sea and they walked through it. But what's so interesting is that so many of these Israelites, these people who were just enslaved for so long and they're being killed and enslaved and their lives are terrible, all of a sudden they're like, we should go back because we don't want to be killed, because they met resistance. And fam, you're going to meet that resistance.
Or you want to go back.
There is going to be something trying to pull you back to what you consider as comfortable. But if you never cross that Red Sea in your life, if you never face that passion or purpose that you've tucked underneath the rug, you will wonder when you are 75 years old, should I have just done it? Should I have faced a hard season for 6 months, a year, or even sometimes a couple weeks? If I had just been willing to cross the Red Sea and had faith enough to face the resistance, what could I have become?
And to believe that you weren't doing it alone and that God would be there with you by your side, letting God split the sea in whatever storm you're in right now in your life, whether it's at a crossroads with your relationship or a crossroads in your career, or maybe this, you're at this crossroads where you're like, I think I chose the wrong degree in school. Whatever that pivotal crossroads moment is for you, for us, it's the journey of our house and where we're going to actually get planted and move forward. Let's all think about that and just move forward knowing that we're going to make that decision that, you know what, I'm not doing this without God. I'm going to trust him to lead me. And I know that when I let him lead me, he's going to feed me and he's going to fuel me. And when resistance hits, because we know it is, God's going to be there for you to split the sea for you to walk right through it. And then there's the breakthrough. You know, and that's what you guys are going to hear in today's episode when we talk to Natalie Green. She is an incredible, inspiring woman that I had the opportunity to really get to know the 9 days that I was in Rwanda. She is the head of their strategic partnerships and development over at African New Life. But beyond that, her personal story is just so inspiring. And we're going to share that coming up with you guys and how she walked through the sea in her own life and some of the storms that she's had to face and overcome. All that when we come back.
Hey fam, this week sponsoring the show, LaCroix Water is back again. If you guys haven't tried LaCroix Sparkling Water, you've been living under a rock. How many times do I have to tell you guys? You've got to try LaCroix Sparkling Water. You guys know I've been eating really clean the beginning of this year. I told you guys a couple episodes ago that your boy was going to keep it nice and clean. The nice thing is that LaCroix doesn't have to go anywhere. I can keep it on my diet regimen because it is an innocent beverage. It is innocent of all things. Sodium, it's innocent. Sweeteners, it's innocent. LaCroix Sparkling Water is an innocent beverage. And did I mention that it is also tasty? I've been slamming the coconut flavor. Sometimes I like to have it in the morning, and sometimes I like to have it in the evening. So just depends on the mood that I'm in today. There are 25 LaCroix flavors, so if you don't like coconut and you want to get your own flavor, that's fine by me. You can go try that out. And they also have LaCroix Curate. If you haven't tried the Curate, well, those are also delicious. LaCroix is non-GMO, it's gluten-free, it's vegan, it's kosher, it pretty much checks all the boxes. If you want to check them out, go to www.lacroixwater.com. That's LACROIX water.com, or check them out on social media at LaCroix Water. Hey fam, before we jump into the episode, I forgot to tell you guys, did you know that we're live on Spotify? I know, so many people have messaged us and been like, when the heck are you guys going to get on Spotify? A year and a half later, baby, we are on Spotify. You can listen now to The Good Life with Stevie and Cezanne on Spotify. And if you want to listen on Apple Podcasts or wherever the heck you're listening, that's fine too. Before we get into the show, of course, I want to read a rating and review from one of you beautiful TGL fam members. This review is from Ricky1994. It says, pure happiness to start my morning. Hey, Stevie and Saz, I started following you after I met Cezanne at Kristen John's meetup. I love your family. This show is so thoughtfully made with such a genuine desire to help others find peace and happiness. Thank you for always brightening my morning and challenging me to be my best self. Anyways, hey, we're going to get to the show.
All right, fam. We've got my girl, Natalie Green, in the house, and we are so excited that she's here to hang out with us. Natalie, how's it going?
Well, it's a beautiful day down in Texas. It's a little confusing on if it's winter or not. It's cold, but it's, you know, beautifully sunny.
I love that. And I love that right now we are in the same state, in the same city, actually. We're both in Round Rock, which is super close. We'll have to get together soon and have a play date like we talked about.
Yes.
When we're all better from these like allergies and everything.
I know. Our two-year-olds are going to hit it off. I just know it.
Yay. All right. So let's just jump into this, Natalie. Man, when we had our time together in Rwanda, which was almost, what, 2 weeks ago? Wow, time is flying by. I just remember having just this life-changing experience being in Rwanda and being able to see life through the lens of African New Life and everything that we got to do. We actually spent last week's episode talking a lot about that trip. And I was just so inspired by some of our late night conversations that we had and just your heart for African New Life, the children, and just for people in general. I feel like you are somebody who is really a connector and you're so encouraging. And I know that your own life story and some of the things that you were telling me that you've had to overcome, it's really incredible to hear you when you talk about it because, you know, hearing you just speak from such a relatable standpoint, I thought, wow, we got to have Natalie on this show to talk about just how you've overcome some of your own personal challenges in both your personal life and professional life. And starting out, you know, if you just want to tell our audience a little bit about kind of like your life before African New Life and just kind of walk us through those days.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you for having me. It's such a joy to get to be on your show. And it was such a joy to get to know you, you know, and such a, I think Rwanda just throws you into this mix where you go deep really fast, which is such a blessing, you know, in this day and age, I feel like just to connect with people and really things that are important to you. And I know we've been overcoming the jet lag the past couple of weeks, but
yes,
I know. I loved getting to connect in Rwanda and just share. I think, yeah, I mean, for me, I'm a Texas girl and I was born and raised here. I went to the University of Texas, but I found myself after I graduated from UT up in New York City. And I really thought I was going to go for a year. You know, I was kind of like, okay, I'm not real sure what I want to do next. I've always loved children and my degree is in child development. And that's always been my background. I knew I would do something with kids, but I thought I was like, well, I have this time in my life just to kind of be, you know, fancy free and footloose. And so I had a friend who was also wanting a change. And so we agreed to move to New York City. She's from California. And we had met through Young Life Camp in college. And we both moved to New York. And I literally found myself there not knowing what I was going to do. But I had been a teacher for a year out of school. And I had kind of this summer to figure it out because I had 3 months of salary and I was going to just go up there and see what God had for me, you know, and I started circling jobs in the New York Times. I ended up getting this job, starting out as an executive assistant to a woman who was the CEO of a small Wall Street research shop called Sanford Bernstein. And it was amazing because within 3 months of me starting with her, she actually got asked to be the CEO of Smith Barney internationally. And so she moved over, she was 37 years old. And she moved over to that company and took me with her. And that was really the beginning of this journey where I thought I was going to be, you know, in New York for a year and just kind of have some fun. And it turned into over a 5-year career in Manhattan on Wall Street. And in the mix of all of this, at the same time, she eventually became the CFO of Citigroup and then the CEO of Merrill Lynch, Bank of America, and just this incredible wow. woman. She was on the cover of Fortune magazine and, being called the last honest analyst. This was at a time when integrity on Wall Street was really important. And they were separating the investment banks from private client, essentially. And so all of a sudden I'm there, I'm literally 24 years old. I didn't have a passport. And she's like, you know, you need a passport like next week, you know? So I found myself like going around the world on a private jet with this private fleet with Citigroup all over, shaking hands with people and getting to just learn alongside her. I knew that I had a lot to learn. And I definitely recall reading Wall Street for Dummies, literally like in the Hong Kong Mandarin Oriental Hotel. It was amazing. And it was this whirlwind of an opportunity for me, which I am so grateful for. You know, simultaneously, I had found a church in New York that I loved where the pastor was from Texas. It felt like a little bit of home, you know, in New York. And at the same time that my career was taking off with her, I also, my pastor returned from Rwanda. And he mm-hmm. had been there. This was back in like 2002. And he gave us the opportunity to sponsor a child in Rwanda. It was with a different organization, but it's kind of neat how this kind of was happening at the same time, right? So I sponsored a little girl, much like you have sponsored Clarice. And mm-hmm. My career kind of took off where I wasn't able to ever go visit her the first, you know, 5 years I sponsored her through my church. And it was kind of a series of events where I ended up taking another job with a hedge fund and taking a month off in between switching companies. And I went to Rwanda and I met her. So 5 years after I'd started sponsoring her, and this was in 2007, and it really changed my life and rocked my world. I mean, I will never forget her stepping off of a van and coming towards me in a light pale yellow dress with ruffles. And it really, like, it's sort of like time stood still, because all of a sudden here I was, you know, 5 years into this career in New York, which I loved. I mean, I had so much, I gained so much insight, so much experience. I mean, truly experiences that, you know, one could write about, like, you know, getting to be on conference calls with Hillary Clinton and Queen Noor and my boss, you know, or getting to be part of events and meeting people of influence and just incredible opportunities. My boss sat on the board of things ranging from Carnegie Hall to Columbia Business School, and just these incredible opportunities for me, and also getting to make a solid, stable income. And be living in Manhattan and having fun with friends and getting to travel and taking these exciting, you know, side trips and that kind of thing. But here I was in Rwanda and truly time stood still, where there was something in my heart that just connected immediately back to my first love, which is really, truly advocating for children. And I realized that it had just been kind of fast and furious, but it was neat because I do think within kind of that next year of coming back to New York and being on a trading floor and being in a hedge fund environment and just listening kind of in the solitude of my heart, you know, outside of work, that my first love was really back now in Rwanda. My heart stayed there, you know, and I couldn't shake it. And it was one of these things where a lot of processing went on that next year just to kind of go, okay, you know, what is it that I really feel led to do? Because I think at this point for me, I came to realize that I'd had this amazing opportunity and experience and had learned so much, but it wasn't my life. You know, I was working for someone else's life, which was an amazing opportunity. But when I started thinking back to what my calling was and my passion and what made my heart come alive, it was thinking about that little girl in Rwanda. That's where my heart started beating fast. And I knew at that point, you know, I needed to make a change. And for me, I was, you know, approaching 30. So it was kind of this like monumental time for me too, of going, okay, I thought I was coming to New York for a year and here I am, I'm almost 30. And also kind of too, I mean, I know that y'all have Texas roots too. You know, all my friends from growing up really had kind of, you know, quote, settled down, you know, and had gotten married and started having children and stuff like that. And I kind of got a little nervous too in my heart, like, okay, I could stay in New York forever. Like it's gotten into my blood. I love it. I've made dear friends here. This is an exciting career and it could continue. And there's nothing wrong with that at all. But I also had this tension, this internal conflict in my heart, because I felt like one, a calling of mine had been placed early to love and nurture children. And two, I always wanted a family. And that's not to say you can't have it in New York, but I wasn't finding any margin in my life on Wall Street to think about that.
Natalie, what's interesting about your story is that, you know, so many people talk about how, you know, in instances like this where they were unhappy and maybe they had a good opportunity, they were unhappy, but, you know, they realized their calling and so they moved on. But it sounds like to me that you were happy, you know, you were living a fun life, you know, that New York City.
Yeah, it makes it even harder.
You know, that cool girl life, you know, with a great job and great opportunity. But then all of a sudden it's like, you know, you meet this child in Rwanda and you have this encounter and it's like you're reawakened, you know, towards your purpose. I mean, what was the biggest resistance, you know, that you felt?
A few things. One was just fear, right? Of walking away from stability, you know, like I was earning a great income and that hadn't, you know, when you go through experiences in life where that isn't the case, and then you have that, it's hard to lay that down and not know if it's going to return or if it'll be there. You know, to go into something like ministry and nonprofit work in Rwanda, you know, you're not doing that for the income, you know? And so it's kind of this conversation internally and with other people and also in praying, you know, to the Lord and just saying, okay, I do want to do this, you know, and I have to trust you. That was a big piece of it. Another piece was just like leaving that life, like you said, like it was exciting and I loved it, you know, like, and there's nothing wrong with that. And that was going to be hard. You know, I had a lot of independence there and then there was on the other side of it was, you know, these great things were happening down in Texas. My parents had actually been divorced for 11 years and they were getting remarried to each other, and which was really amazing. And my sister and her husband were having babies. So I was becoming an aunt and I was far away from my nephews and all these great things were happening. So I also felt torn on the other side. Like I wanted to get back home near family. And I wanted to be able to do something that was really my first love. And when I thought about, and I know I can stand corrected on this, but I wasn't finding that I was going to be able to stay in New York and do what I wanted to do in terms of vocation and be able to afford that. And so I knew that it was probably going to be a shift of location. Although I'm sure that that could change, but at that time, that's kind of where it was at. And the opportunity for me was, you know, that I had a network down in Texas too, and I wanted to be closer to my family. So that's really truly what won out for me was I want to be near my family, or at least based near my family. And I wanted also this, I desired to be a mom, you know, and I didn't know how in the world I could do that all up in New York. Like, how could I become a mom potentially on my own if I wasn't married still? Because I was single and I'm still single to this day. I do believe that love is in my future and I don't feel like that is gone. I just felt like, well, I was 30 and there's some real things you have to look at, you know, like there is a real kind of TikTok biological thing going on. There's, you know, just time and space and all of that, and being able to figure out, well, if I did become a mom, you know, in the next however many years, how could I do that along with working and along with working in an area that's passion filled of mine that may not pay as much as what I'm making in New York. And when you consider all those things, I realized I needed to be closer to my village, if you will, you know, of support.
Yeah.
That's so interesting because there's so many parallels between what you were going through and what Cezanne and I feel like we're going through right now. You know, so many, there's such a love for the life that you developed, you know what I mean? But you feel this calling, this thing that you can't even quite put your finger on yet. And it literally causes you to have to move. You know, for us, a large thing is possibly moving ourselves, you know, back to Texas as well. And we've been here for 9 months and kind of in this state of purgatory, trying to figure out what is going on with our life. But all the while, I think these questions, you know, about what am I supposed to do are a lot easily answered when they're answered selflessly. And a big thing and a big piece of resistance, I think, for Saz and I, and like you just mentioned, and many people who are probably listening, is it's money, you know, or it's like even sacrificing relationships. I mean, those are two things. It's like we love people and we love security. So we don't want to see those things go away, right? And obviously you're moving back home to family and such. But I mean, how did you even make that transition moving from New York back to Austin? I mean, it's easier said than done. I mean, you know, it's like you hear stories of people that do it, but it's like, it's a real step. It's a real step of faith, you know, and it's a real bold move.
It is, you know, and that's such a good question because it's not like we all get to click our heels and get to the next thing, you know. Like you said, it takes some strategy and some hard work, you know. And I interviewed. So I knew I couldn't just jump right over into working for a nonprofit in Rwanda. Like, I didn't even know who I could work with, you know, I knew my heart was there. But what I ended up doing was looking for similar work that I was doing in New York in Austin. And it looks a little different, but I was able to find a position with a family office, a former CFO of a large company in Austin, nationwide, that's based here. And he has a family office. So I was able to do some similar work to what I was doing, working with foundations and families in that way, all the while coming and doing that, but kind of keeping an eye out for getting to know the landscape of organizations doing work in Rwanda. And I knew that would take time. So I was like, well, I've got to move. I've got to pay my bills. I still have to pay rent. You know, I have to pay for a cross-country move, all this. So I had to keep working, of course. And so I ended up finding a job in Austin that I was able to take and then and do that. And I knew I would commit to that for, you know, a season. And then I started doing some research, really, on organizations in Rwanda. And what's really cool is that the chairman of the board of African New Life Ministries, his grandkids, went to the school that I taught at for a year before I moved to New York. So it's kind of a full circle thing. I started kind of putting a bug out in people's ears and a teacher that I had taught with said, hey, you know, this family that was in my class, you probably know of them. They just got back from Rwanda. And this was 10 years ago. So it's not like you're hearing people like just got back from Rwanda, you know? So I called them up and I was like, can I have coffee? Can we connect? You know? So I connected with them and they put me in touch with their father, who's the chairman of our board, who then put me in touch with Pastor Charles, and the founder and president of African New Life Ministries and our executive director. And it's kind of fun because at that time, you know, 10, this is a little over 10 years ago now, there were only 4 employees of African New Life. It had been volunteer led for over 7 years, 7 or 8 years, I think, at that time. And so when I came on, when I talked to them, they were like, hey, you know, like we love your heart. We love what you want to do and your passion for children in Rwanda and wanting to, God willing, spread, you know, this ministry into other parts of the country. When I found African New Life, I just loved it. There were certain things I was looking for that were really important to me. And the most important thing was that it was founded and run by Rwandans, and that it mm-hmm. was, there weren't a bunch of Americans living in Rwanda trying to assert their cultural views on another country. I loved that it was Rwandan nationals that were making the decisions about how programs should be run and the best way to go about, you know, helping this and helping that. Because I had been on a trip, as I mentioned earlier, with my church in New York, and that's what I learned on that trip. It was an exploratory vision trip, just looking at many organizations and ministries. And that was what I took a lot of notes. I was just taking it all in like a sponge. I mean, essentially just like I watched you do Suzanne 2 weeks ago. That was me, you know, in that trip, just kind of just eyes wide open, taking tons of notes, asking a ton of questions and just wanting to understand things. And so when God kind of aligned this meeting of me with Pastor Charles, I was blown away because all the things that I had kind of bulleted, you know, later in my notebook about things that were important to me, African New Life hit every single one. And I thought, how beautiful mm-hmm. that the first real organization I even came face to face with checked every box. I mean, I just knew wow. it was just this, such this affirmation I felt from the Lord of just like right here. And what was also, what was cool about it, but also hard about it, was that they were not in a place to hire. They were still very small. And they were like, you know, we want to keep in touch with you. We just don't have headcount. You know, we don't have the ability to hire right now. And it was crazy, y'all, because I went back home and I called over my pastor's wife at the time and some of my dearest friends to pray with me. And I knew in my heart what God was telling me to do. So I went back and had conversations with Alan, my boss to this day. We've both been there, you know, the longest. We've been in ministry together now over 10 years. And I just said, okay, I mean, this is crazy, but I feel like I'm supposed to just raise my support for like 3 years and let y'all catch up. And then if it's working for y'all and it's working for me, then you can start paying me after 3 years.
Wow. I love that you did not give up. I love that you didn't give up, Natalie.
Well, it was crazy to a lot of people.
I'm sure.
Like, why are you leaving that secure income and then you're going to go raise your support and make very little? It was kind of crazy talk, but it was, I knew in my heart, you know?
That's the thing, is when you know, you know. What were you gonna say, Steve?
Well, with you know, like your life in New York, right? It's like you have all these things that people would obviously look at and be like, well, I want that, you know, like we were talking about, just the opportunity, just to live a fun life in New York, you know, to be in somewhat of a cool position, you
salary,
know, and
yeah.
having fun. And now your life is completely changing, and there's the idealistic side, which sounds good, you know, and I'm helping people and all of that. But you know, what were the things that were actually, you know, the things that were feeding you once you made that move? You know, instead of this money and fun and status and location, what were the new things that really kind of filled your cup once you made the transition from New York to New Life?
Oh, absolutely. I think for sure, purpose, calling, you know, feeling this fire in my heart to tell people, to tell the world about what I saw in Rwanda and what this country had overcome in such a short period of time. And this was even 10 years ago, you know, 15 years after the genocide. I couldn't get over what I saw. And that was a huge piece of it, was just this passion and desire for people to know about Rwanda and to know what they had overcome and how, what a beautiful country it was, beautiful people, and this joy that these people had with nothing. And I thought, man, I've been getting on a subway every day and looking at people not interacting with one another with earbuds in, not talking, you know, living this like insular kind of world, like just kind of not. And I do want to say this. I moved to New York right after 9/11, and New York is also a very beautiful place where people came together and it was incredible. So I want to be very, I want to say that that's not to say New Yorkers or whatever. I love New Yorkers. In fact, I think that they have the mushiest heart with the hardest shells, but they have a, it's like, I call them like an M&M. They're like M&Ms to me.
Yeah.
They've got this hard shell, but it's not hard to crack. They're just chocolate on the inside. It's like a beautiful thing. But what I want, I really feel that way. But the everyday life, what I'm talking about, what I was experiencing in New York, you would experience anywhere in the United States. It was an American thing. It wasn't a New York thing. I want to be very clear about that.
Yeah.
Just that we don't have to depend on one another, right? On community, generally speaking, we can live very independent of one another. We, you know, in terms of our, like our biggest needs, food, shelter, you know, water, we don't generally have to depend on our next door neighbor for that. Right. And mm-hmm. so we have the ability to kind of come and go into our houses, into our driveways, into our garages, up our stairs, whatever it is, through our doors, and kind of do our thing, right? And we're kind of coming and going, and sometimes we don't ever say hi or even know the name of the person next to us, right? That is what really was jarring for me of what I saw was so different in Rwanda, was the way that they lived in community and they loved one another. And one day I fed your kids and one day you fed my kids. And we always were going to make it work out together. And
I love that.
Yeah, I couldn't shake it. It was, you know, it was so beautiful. And it was so, you know, I grew up as a child in the 80s. And honestly, for me, my heart for Africa came in 1984. I was 6 years old. Images I saw in the Ethiopia famine. But I think, you know, what I was seeing then on TV was like flies on eyes and these big bellies, like bloated bellies, not big bellies, but bloated from you know, deficiencies of protein or carbohydrate and just this sad, sad, sad thing. But when I went to Rwanda, that's not what I saw. I saw joy. I saw community. I saw love. I saw hospitality.
That's what I saw too.
Yeah. And I just thought this, I want the world to know what I saw. And it just shook me to my core, you know? So I think that was what was driving me to get back to your question is, that was a big piece of what was driving that was that purpose and calling that I felt and working with children. Like there were, you know, I did see that there were a lot of kids who needed a voice and who needed to be advocated for. And it wasn't because they didn't have parents that loved them. It's that they needed you know, assistance to go to school and to have the same opportunity I was so graciously given that I didn't even know was such a privilege, you know, and just wanting to be able to communicate that to the world or my world.
Wow. Natalie, how long was it when you had your kids, like when you decided to start that process and journey into motherhood with that was after came African New Life, right?
So I had always wanted to be a mom. And like I said, you know, just, I was kind of had that bend straight out of the womb. You know, you see those little girls that like carry around and take care of their little baby dolls. And that 100% was me. And so I all, I mean, like your little teeny and I, and her little new dolls. And the thing is, like, I really thought like in my 20s, like when, if you would have asked me in high school or in my 20s, even in college, I would have thought I would have been this young mom and my friends would have said that too. But you know, that was not my story. And that's not good or bad. It's just factual. Like it was just not my journey. My journey had all these other amazing things and that desire to be a mom never went away. It didn't like, you know, I never waxed and waned, or I'm sorry, it never waned. It just always waxed. That's the deal. And so I always, it just kept getting building up more and more. So I knew that that was, I knew the older I got, I had more and more of this feeling of I'm not going to miss it. And what I mean by that is if the day came where I thought I was getting closer to the age where I really needed to make a decision, I wasn't going to not be a mom because I wasn't married. And that was hard because I come from, you know, the Bible Belt in Southern Texas and all that. So I feel like I have a lot of, you know, people that maybe would not like that thought of becoming like a single mom, or I call it a solo mama, because it wasn't like I was in a situation where I was parenting with someone and then I wasn't. It was that I made this decision to go into it knowing that that would be the case. And just in terms of also like, you know, custody and sharing, you know, responsibilities for the for the child and parenting and that kind of thing. And then also financially. And for me, it was just that I wasn't going to miss it. I felt like what I had seen in the world were that there were a lot of children who needed homes. And I knew that I could be an incredible mom. And I knew that I was made to be a mama, you know, and God had put that inside of my heart. And he had also gifted me with different, you know, characteristics and a nurturing demeanor and different things that I really wanted to be able to love that way. And so I also, though, so what kind of what happened is that I at some point said, if I get close to 35 and I'm not married, I'm going to move forward with adopting. And I'd always wanted to adopt. And I had mentioned that starting in junior high with my parents. So I knew that I wanted to biologically conceive if I could. And I knew that I wanted to adopt if I could. And I always just thought it would be in marriage. But as I got older, I started realizing, well, I want to do it whether I'm in marriage or, you know, not. And so I just felt led to adopt first. And so I went down this journey of applying and getting all the paperwork complete. And it was a whirlwind. I literally finished my paperwork in December of 2012. And in February of 2013, 2 months later, I had my son in my arms. I mean, it was crazy fast. And so my little one, Jude, was born. And I did a domestic adoption with him here in Texas. And, you know, it was incredible. Like, there's so many stories. And I know I shared some with you while we were going and seeing the animals. It's just how God was speaking to me and really showing me that he was on his way. And my family and friends were incredible. They were just wrapped around me and excited for me. And like, yes, like you do this. Like you have your God with you in all of this. Like you are, so strong in your faith, and you know that God is with you and we are with you, and we just cannot wait to see, you know, what is going to happen here. And I mean, Jude is just this light in the world. He is phenomenal, you know, and it was incredible to become a mom like overnight. Literally, I got a call on a Thursday and he was in my arms on a Friday. But I really do believe, and I told you this, that in that season prior leading up to him coming, God was really speaking to me. And he was showing me that he was on his way. Just in signs, like, I mean, as crazy as this sounds, God used elephants to talk to me. And
that's right. I remember you told me that on our safari.
Can we clarify this?
Yes, Stevie, we should clarify for Stevie here.
It was just crazy. I'm not kidding. But like, I just kept seeing images and different things like with elephants. And it was crazy. Like, I mean, even, I don't know how to explain it, but they kept popping up in like very specific ways. And to the degree of like seeing my name in a company next to an elephant emblem. And then like seeing different signs. I was in Paris like in that fall and seeing elephants everywhere. And there were all these, like it was a symbolism kind of thing. Like I just kept seeing them in important moments. I'd be having these.
Did you look it up at the time and wonder, like, what do elephants mean?
No, I knew that they never forgot. I knew they had good memories and I knew that they were like amazing with their kids and stuff like that. But I didn't look it up. But what's crazy is that the morning that I got him, when I walked in, he was covered in elephant. He was in an elephant outfit,
my God.
Wrapped in an elephant blanket in an elephant swing. I mean, it was incredible. And it was just, it was like crazy.
Didn't it make you just feel like God was right there and just validating and confirming and affirming everything? And it just, it feels so good. It's like God just puts that exclamation mark on it all. And it's just so cool. Wow.
Yes. And I think I even shared with you too, like when I was, the month before when I was looking to have, when I was thinking about in January, I was talking to my best friend about names. And I had told her I always loved the name Jude. And she was telling me a story about her. She was pregnant and her firstborn is my goddaughter. And she was telling me that if the baby she was pregnant with was a boy, his name was going to be James. And she loved in the Bible that it said that Jude and James were brothers. And she found that after I had told her that was the name I was thinking about, you know, she went and read it. So I was like, I should go read Jude in the Bible too. It's been a long time. There's only one chapter. And I opened it up and I read the NIV. And then I always like to cross-reference into the Message. And so I looked over in the Message and it said, in the very first verse, it said, I, Jude, am a slave to Jesus Christ and brother to James, writing to those loved by God the Father, called and kept safe by Jesus Christ. Relax. Everything's going to be all right. Rest. Everything's coming together. Open your heart. Love is on the way. And I almost dropped my phone. I was like,
oh my God, I'm crying.
I'm having a boy and his name's Jude and he's on the way. And sure enough, he was in my arms less than 4 weeks later.
Wow. I just love that, Natalie, listening to this whole journey and story. I think the underlying theme really in your life has been when God has called you to do something, you're that first person that will stand up and walk and not even know what to do. Like we said, the Indiana Jones imagery of the invisible steps, like you are living that life. And it is so clear that God has you and he has so many incredible things in store for you, but it just takes us being willing when we're cornered by courage to just take that first step. And that's what you really are an example of, is somebody who has done that in every area of her life. And you are one to say, like, it isn't easy, but you've been able to find this newfound happiness by listening to this great calling that God has had on your life. And I just, it's so encouraging. And I know our listeners are going to absolutely love, love, love this message. Before we let you go, I just wanted to ask you, you know, we just had this incredible trip in Rwanda with African New Life. We were able to raise some great money for the kids. I just wanted you to just quickly, briefly kind of tell us what's coming up for African New Life. What should our audience know if they want to get involved? How can you speak to them on that real quick?
Thank you so much. And just also, I want to say thank you for what you just said. And I know that you know this because you said it, and it truly is all God. And it has not been easy. And it's also been amazing. And it is, I'm just so grateful to have Jesus, because I don't know how to walk those steps Amen. Without him, truly. So thank you. And yes, we had an amazing time. I'm so grateful to you, Suzanne, and our friends who came and just told people across the nation about African New Life who maybe had never heard of African New Life and what we're doing. And, you know, we do have some exciting things coming up. And the biggest thing that we're really working on is that we really want to take African New Life into different parts of Rwanda where we haven't been before, because we know that there are a lot of kids who need to be sponsored to go to school. And just like you're sponsoring Clarice, you know, the more people that we have on board, whether that's individual sponsors, or if it's churches that want to connect with us, or businesses or organizations, that is kind of what we've got coming up. We want to literally double the amount of communities that we're in. So right now we're in 7, and we're hoping in the next, you know, 5 years to be in close to 14 or 15 communities across the nation of Rwanda, which means that a church would be planted in that community. It means that more people would be able to be sponsored to go to school. And there would be that hearty lunch program for those students in that area. And so the way that we do that is we do it very carefully, very responsibly, and we work hand in hand with the government to be invited into areas of Rwanda that need that assistance and need that kind of jump start in their community so that things can begin to bloom because of that church, because of that community development that's happening, and because of all those students getting access to education.
Amazing. It's, you know, it takes me back to what Pastor Charles said. You know, when he started African New Life, he said that he told God, like, how am I going to do this? I'm one person. But he couldn't shake it, just like you couldn't shake feeling called to go out there. And it's amazing what happens when somebody else's troubles become your troubles, and how one person really can make an impact. When I found out that it costs 83 cents to provide a kid with a meal, $6 a week, $6 will give a kid a week's worth of food. And you think about, how can I eliminate maybe a Starbucks drink or, you know, a movie ticket or something just to be able to provide for that kid. And me being there out in the grounds, I saw, you know what, one person really can make an impact. And if we all really come together, I really believe Rwanda, God is using Rwanda to really speak to this world. And I believe that Rwanda is going to be that incredible witness for so many other countries to see that, like, if we all come together and start caring for each other, I really believe that we start to move towards that positive change. And I just love everything about Africa New Life. Stevie is, since I got back, Natalie, he's like, I want to go next time.
Yes,
because
yes,
I've just been talking about it all day, every day.
We're going to do it and bring Teenie.
Yes.
We'll bring Teenie and we'll pray for a nonstop flight. No, I'm just...
Me and you both.
Oh my God, Natalie, we love you so much, and we're going to include all the links on this this show's episode for people to get on and donate. We've got to reach that goal and get more kids sponsored. I'm sure we're going to probably have you on our show again at some point. You're literally right down the street from us, so thank you so much, Natalie, for your time today. We love you, and we just wish you the best.
I love y'all too. Thank you so much.
All right, Natalie, take care.
Bye. Hey fam, we hope you guys enjoyed that interview with Natalie. Suzanne and I definitely did. I mean, it meant so much to us hearing just her story, babe, and the things that she went through and how many parallels there were between her story and ours and what we're going through right now.
But you know what, guys, before we go, before you turn off this episode and get going with the rest of your day, we don't want you guys to leave without us being able to just remind you again that together we can trust God, let him lead the way. You know he's going to help you through this crossroads period or whatever uncomfortable situation you're in right now. And Stevie, you're gonna end this out in prayer.
I'm going to pray for everybody because we just want to bless you guys. Every week you come in here and we talk about something like this, and maybe you're facing a big decision, or maybe there's something, like we said, that passion, that purpose that you've tucked away. It's looming in your closet and you don't want to open and face your purpose. Mm-hmm. I just want to encourage you guys to be brave this week. Be brave and think critically about your life and what you want and what you're passionate about. Think about that for a while. And once you've really thought about that, if there's things that are stirring in your heart that you feel are pulling you another way, don't let the fear and the resistance keep you from exploring that path. Amen. So I just pray that you guys are encouraged this week. And so we'll just pray real quick before we get out of here. We love you, Good Life fam. You guys are the best. You already know that. If you haven't, leave us a rating or review, and let's pray. Lord God, I just pray for every single person listening to this show right now. There's so many people out there listening who they're not walking in their purpose, or they're not letting you lead, or they haven't been open to your leadership in your life, or they've been enslaved in some way, God, but they're ready to break free. But there's a sea that they have to cross in their life and they just don't know how they're going to do it. The good news is, sometimes you just can't do it. And God, you're the one who can do it. And so we have to look to you and we have to say, God, split the sea, because I got to get through this thing. I want to make it to the other side. I want to know what's on the other side. There's so much more for me, God, but I got to get through this sea. How can I do it? I just pray, God, for those people that you would split the sea for them, because when they look to you, God, they know that they can do all things through Christ who strengthens them, Lord. We just pray for you guys. We love you guys. We pray passion and purpose over your lives. No longer will you wander, but you will find your way. In the name of Jesus, we thank you guys for being part of the Good Life fam. We hope you guys have a great week.
Amen.
Don't forget to share some love. And don't forget, we're on Spotify, baby. Ooh. What's good? So you can listen on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. It doesn't matter to us.
We're on Spotify officially.
Hey, leave us a rating review. We love that so much. Thank you so much, guys. Hope you have a great week. Hey fam, if you like our show, you're going to love Off the Vine with Caitlin Bristow on Podcast One. Pour yourself a glass of wine and hear Caitlin play games, chat it up with some of the biggest names in Bachelor Nation and beyond, of course. Check out Off the Vine every week on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.